Listeners, welcome back to another episode of Impacting the Classroom, the podcast that talks about big topics in education. I'm Marnetta Larimer. As always, you know I like to ask, what's impacting education? Making true of their promise, I'm being joined today with folks from Teach From America who joined us last season. Welcome, Grant and Robin. For the listeners who haven't got to know you last season, can you take a moment to introduce yourself and tell us what you do at Teach for America? Let's start with you, Grant.
Thanks so much, Marnetta. Hi, everyone. My name is Grant Van Eaton, and I am a senior researcher at Teach for America. I'm a former teacher. I helped train a lot of our teachers for many years, and now I have the amazing job where I get to think about how do we continue to improve and make our program better. And so I work really closely with our program team, and I have Robin here with me today, and I'm really excited to chat more. So Robin, I'll toss it over to you.
Thanks, Grant, and hi, Marnetta. It's so fantastic to see you again. For you all listening, my name is Robin Greatrex, and I am our Senior Managing Director of Programmatic Data, Learning, and Insights. And so that means I get the really fun job of leading all of our data, learning, and continuous improvement strategy for our core member and alumni educator programs here at Teach for America. Like Grant, I was a former elementary school teacher, and I am just absolutely obsessed with teacher development. And so I feel really lucky every day that I get to do this job.
Oh, and it shows in all the work that you've been doing. Like, all my interactions with both of you just exude passion for the work. But, you know, our listeners will decide as, you know, we continue to talk with you about your work at Teach for America. So for those of us who didn't catch you last season, can you give us a brief overview of what Teach for America is?
Sure. And I'm happy to start there, Marnetta. So Teach for America, our primary mission is to find, develop, and recruit top talent for our classrooms. And so we are looking for people to come and join. We have two programs, one that's a little less known, our Ignite Fellowship, where we're actually working with current college students who are doing high impact tutoring for middle and high school kids throughout the country, especially thinking about all the learning loss post-COVID. Then we kind of have our marquee core member program, where we place teachers in urban and rural classrooms throughout the country to work to achieve an equitable education system for all students. And then many of our teachers are core members, as we call them, in those first 2 years, stay on, and they take on that alumni badge and banner. And of our 65,000 plus alumni at this point, about a third of them are still in school systems as teachers, as principals, as district and state leaders. And over 80% of them are working in fields that impact education. We know that a high quality teacher is so important to students, but they also need access to high quality healthcare, and people that are working in policy and legal spaces to change the whole system to make it more equitable for all kids. And so our primary goal and mission is to make sure that kids have an outstanding leader in front of them in classrooms, and that experience then as their alumni drives them to change the system for kids moving forward.
Oh, thank you for that, Grant. Robin, did you want to add anything to that?
No, I think Grant's summary is quite beautiful.
I know, it was wrapped up in a nice little bow. Almost makes me want to go join. I feel like I need to be there. So the last time we spoke, we talked about Teach for America and your organization adopting CLASS. What have you been up to since then?
Yeah, so we have started implementation. When we were talking with you all last summer, we were gearing up for our first year of implementing CLASS across our entire network of regions and core members. And talking to you now, we have completed two observation cycles. So we did one observation cycle in the fall at the beginning of the school year, and then we have completed our winter observation cycle in the past few weeks, and are starting our third observation cycle now. And it's really exciting. This means that we have implemented CLASS across all of our pre-K through third grade core members across all of our regions. And that's around 500 teachers right now. And so we had our coaches observing their classrooms, scoring those observations, and then entering the data through my TeachStone. And we've now rolled that up into our internal system reporting. So people can utilize these data to support continuous improvement with their core members, with their coaching cohorts, with their regional cohorts, and then broadly across our program. And as part of that implementation, it's meant that we have trained over 120 coaches to be certified CLASS observers on the elementary measure. And right now we're sitting at about a 93% certification rate for those folks. And we continue to have more coaches trained as they come in and join staff, come back from their various leaves. So we are very excited about what we've been able to accomplish in this year one, not only in terms of scaling up the certification of our coaches, but then also in our ability to implement observation windows across our system and build out the reporting infrastructure in-house that is going to enable us to really utilize these data for continuous programmatic improvement.
And Marnetta, if I could just brag on Robin and her team and all of our coaches really, really quickly and just like double click into some of that, like this is a lot of infrastructure that we've been building since the last summer when we talked with you all. And just the like to scale up to observe, I think it was hundreds of classrooms, it was over 800 classrooms in our last observation cycle, to have certification and to just all of the infrastructure that it takes to get everyone certified across the country, then to implement those observations with fidelity, be able to report on them, talk about them. I have to say, I have just been blown away and I have so much respect for all of the systems using Class right now that like, that was a huge lift to get here and to really overhaul. We talk about systems change, like changing our own systems internally to do this. And what I'm really proud about with our staff too is the journey they have been on over this last year to not only understand Class, deeply internalize it, but then understand what it means to use Class data for continuous improvement. Mm-hmm. And we're already seeing that across a lot of our sites. We were just testing a new protocol we're going to be using over the last month to help with reflection and making meaning of the data and driving action toward continuous improvement. We're seeing huge increase in the number of classrooms being observed as we kind of work out all the kinks with like how to log into systems and how to record things, the unsexy things that no one ever talks about when they just want to see the data. And so I just want to like send out a huge shout out to our amazing team that has gone through a lot of change management. And we think about like the data fluency that's required to think about data in a new way and to think about an observation system that they've never used before. Yeah. I think we've been learning a ton over the last few months about how to do that. And that it's a journey, like we're like step one. And so we're excited to kind of share what we've been learning, but also with an eye toward, we're just getting started. And we're really, really excited about where we're gonna go from here.
I love that. And I love all the numbers. You can tell you all love data, like, you know, throwing all the numbers out there. When you think about this journey, and yes, it's just your beginning and this implementation of Class, how did you generate that buzz and that buy-in for your people to be so invested in going through this changing system, you know, all these changing systems with you?
Yeah, I really think the proof for a lot of that is in the tool itself. We haven't had experience with a shared observational tool in Teach for America for over a decade. And when people come into the Class training and they start getting deep into the dimensions and the domains and the indicators, and they start understanding what Class is looking at and how they're defining interactions and how they're defining the depth and complexity of interactions, they inherently see the connection to what they think of as high quality classrooms. And so I think in a lot of ways, the tool speaks for itself. The measure speaks for itself. So I think as people were going through their 3-day training, they were really experiencing, at least in that level, the alignment that they felt around their own beliefs about strong teaching and what great classrooms look like with the measure. And then as they went out and started to observe their core members and their teachers, I think that their investment grew not only because they could see the measure in practice with the people that they're coaching, but because I think they started to realize how being a trained Class observer, a certified Class observer, changes the way they see classrooms. And we've heard anecdotally from multiple coaches across our regional teams that this made them a more rigorous classroom observer, that they were able to have a more balanced view of what was happening in the classroom, that they were able to see things that were things that they didn't normally focus on in their sort of pre-class lives. And so I think the more they're using it, the more that they are getting fluent in the measure, fluent in the interactions, fluent in all of the pieces of it, that investment naturally grows because they are seeing how it's making them better coaches, which is then in turn helping them drive the improvement that they're seeing with their teachers.
Mm-hmm. And Marnetta, what I would add to that, co-sign all of that. I think the other thing we've tried to do, and like we said, we're learning and growing here too, and so we're making adjustments as we go, is to make sure that the system around our coaches enables mm-hmm. them to have the time and the space to do that, and that they have the data readily at their fingertips to make and inform their next steps and decisions. But like by writing it into their job descriptions, making sure that like the system and their managers were there to support the implementation of it, that they had the data to be able to track their progress. And I think sometimes like the measure alone isn't enough. And as we think about implementation, it's the way less sexy things about like, did we actually make time in your day for this to happen? Did we make this a formal part of your role responsibilities? Have we set expectations and given you the tools to say like, how am I going to make sense of these data? And I think that was a hard change process for us. This wasn't part of like the normal practice of our coaches. We didn't have the shared alignment. And that's what I've been so excited about with class is the common language that it's given us to be able to talk across all of our settings and to learn together. And I think that felt really abstract as we were starting to implement it. And like, mm-hmm. why do I have to get certified? Why do I have to be reliable? Why is this important? And while we had the on paper answers for those things, what I've been really enjoying over the last, especially the second administration cycle, is that people are, as they're gaining fluency in using it and actually mm-hmm. putting that into practice and using the data, like, oh, I get it now. And just the importance of that lived experience of the tool. Unsurprising. Like, I feel like I almost want to do like a class observation on our implementation of class and the way that it's been implemented and like, is productivity enough? Do we have multiple formats for people to engage? What new language are we using together? And how are we helping people develop new language? So I think that has been a really fun part of the journey too, to see as people put it into practice, how their beliefs and mindsets and investment shift and change because they see the impact that it's having for kids.
Yeah, that parallel process, you can't help it, right? You see those effective interactions, right? And you know, like that's really what drives those outcomes. And then it's a natural tendency to lean into it with your everyday life and in your adult interactions or your interactions with your children. Like that's what I found. That's what I found, at least in my world. I think one of the things that we didn't talk about with your implementation was the fact that, if I remember, you were talking about building these supports for your people as they were, you know, getting certified and going through all these processes. One of the biggest things that you did was your administrators, the people who were going to support them, had to do this first, correct?
We had the folks that manage our coaches take the training first. And I think that really helped them understand what was going to be expected of their coaches and also provided them with the same experiential foundation around the training and then to enable that continued use and to help build that investment. So Grant and I just spent all this, you know, time talking about how the measure speaks for itself and then the enabling conditions around the measure as a way to build investment. But I think a lot of this also happened through our folks that manage and support our coaches because they were able to like build that initial investment themselves through that training. And I think that this has been one of the key things about how we're doing this is that it's really important for us that people are very clear about what the measure is and what the measure is not. And by having folks go through that training, not just our coaches, but other people, and we were able to open up training slots for other people beyond just those coach managers. So a lot of our regional leadership, some of our leadership from our fundraising and development teams were also able to join those trainings as well and committed to the 3-day training. Some of them got certified. And I think this is allowing us and our system more broadly to support people in truly understanding what class is, that it isn't just a tool that is about teacher practice. It's more than that because it's about interactions. It's about the kids in the classroom. It's about how they're interacting with each other and how they're interacting with adults. And I think that helps us organizationally operate with a much higher level of nuance and understanding about what these data actually mean. So when our development folks go onto a call with a funder, they are able to say, like, these data are telling us this about the quality of what's happening in our classrooms. It, you know, inherently involves kids. It's not divorced from that. And so I think that's been really critically important. And we know that one of the challenges that we continue to have is the difference in knowledge and investment level in some places of people who have gone through those trainings and people who have not is apparent in some places in the system. And so I think we're really thinking about as we go into year two of implementation, beyond the like tweaks and iterations and refinements that we're making on our just day-to-day implementation plan of how we, you know, do observations, get the data recorded, et cetera, that we're also really thinking about how we continue to ensure that other people in the system really deeply understand the tool. Maybe they don't go through the full training, but we need to do some work with them to make sure beyond just like a one pager or a quick video that they can interpret and make meaning of these data just as well as someone who has gone through the training.
Yeah. And a concrete example of how we've done that really recently that I think just speaks to the commitment of the organization necessary to do this, but also to successful implementation, is one, we really tried to center the user, the coach, as the primary user. And so as we've been designing our data dashboards, as we've been thinking about our meaning-making and sense-making protocols of how people are going to engage with the data after each observation window, the coach's experience of that is our primary driver. They're the user that we're testing it with. We're making sure to get their feedbacks on the report. Does it help you answer the questions you have quickly and easily? Is it guiding through like action steps that you have, that you're going to take with your people? And we've tried to weave into that other leaders from different parts of the organization. So like our development teams, our external affairs teams, we had our president and CEO, our COO at the last one, and building their fluency, not just with the tool and the data, but in how the coach is using the data. So that when they see the data, when they're talking about it with people externally, when they're talking with district partners about how we're using the data and how we're improving, it's grounded in the experience that our coaches are having to use that to improve interactions in classrooms, not in some like 10,000 foot altitude one pager, like Robin said. And so I think that's another way in which we're trying to build fluency at all levels of the organization, and that fluency be grounded in how are coaches using this to drive more positive interactions in classrooms for kids and the communities in which we serve.
I'm loving all of the pieces that you're sharing with our listeners who are, you know, getting ready to adopt class and may need some help or assistance, right, with some implementation steps and like things that are working and how you're building that infrastructure for success in your organization. So I appreciate all that you've added there. You mentioned that you've already completed a couple of cycles, right, of observations. So what were the results? I know you probably don't want to give me digits and things, but what were the results and what were some aha or key takeaways from those results?
Yeah. And while I'm not going to give you any numbers, that's partly because we haven't focused on the numbers. The numbers aren't what's important to us. And Robin and I, just to like give me like little like nerdy geek moment, what we care about more than anything, and like based on the research that your team has shared with us and we've done in deep dives with you all, we know that focusing on improvement over performance and accountability is what's going to drive changes in classrooms for kids. And so our like laser focus from the get-go has been, how do we decenter the numbers, but instead help us focus on shifts in distributions and changes over time? And so we actually spent a ton of time reimagining what reports would look like, getting away from like heat maps and targets and like, did you get to this quantitative number? And we actually designed our reporting suite around area plots and joy plots. And if you don't know what joy plot is, Google it. It's super cool. But it's essentially overlaid histograms that we're looking at. And when we just got the data, while you can kind of see where the average score is in like your traditional bar graph, and we have like cutoff lines to show you where the like transition from low to medium and medium to high is, so that you can place it in context. And we have bars for like the enterprise average. So as you filter by regions and cohorts, you can see relative where you are relative to the scores for the enterprise. We're not putting that like you had a 4.7 or you had a 5. And part of that is like to avoid rater bias. Like we know the second you say, oh, our goal now is for every classroom to have a 5, magically a lot of 5s are going to start to appear. So we're trying to de-incentivize that. But we also know that that's not what's going to make the classroom better for kids. There's nothing magical about a 5. And so what is magical is when whatever our baseline was shifts. And so we've created overlaying histograms of the distribution. And the beauty of this is that we saw all three domains shift from time one to time two. And we were thrilled beyond belief about that. I think the other thing that we were like assuming would happen, but it's always great to see the data, our second year teachers have higher class scores than our first year teachers. And so we're seeing that improvement over time. So that's good. And as we started to do some like statistical analyses on the back end of it, there were no gaps by like subgroups. So by gender, by race, class, ethnicity. As we looked at our teachers, equity is also really important to us and is like the center of our implementation here. And so we really wanted to monitor and make sure that There weren't differences in experience or systematic gaps that we're showing based on subgroups, so that if so, we could target that and address that and make sure that everyone was having an equitable experience of the tool. And we're really thrilled that didn't show up in the data. Of course, we've only had 2 time points, so we're going to keep monitoring that. But this shift toward thinking in distributions and thinking like statisticians as opposed to kind of our linear algebra target approach hasn't been easy. Let me be really clear that like that is not our default, and it's taken some like unlearning as a staff. And we've gotten a lot of like, well, but I just want to see the numbers. Can't you just show me the numbers? And we've had to be really intentional about how we walk people through that, how we set them up to look at it, how we design the reports to walk them through it. And so to answer your question, we did see a shift. The shift was positive, and it was really exciting. There's also a lot of variation in the data. So as regions dive into their individual data, there weren't always positive shifts. And we got into some really cool discussions about like bimodal distributions, where they were like, oh, if I had just seen the average, I would have thought things were okay. But now I see I have a really high performing group and a really low performing group, and I need to target that group. And so it shifted the type of like thinking and strategic planning that we're doing as a result, and how we visualize where teachers are in different interactions in their classroom. And that's been really, really fun to see. And I think is going to have a huge impact as we continue to develop our fluency there and really center how are we shifting distributions over time, not how are we getting to higher scores each window.
Just to build a little bit off of what Grant's sharing, and thank you, Grant, for giving such a really amazing summary of like where we are and where we are in this data journey. I think one of the other hopes that we had for what implementing class in our system would change is the conversation about all the other stuff we do too. And we're seeing that. So in these meaning-making sessions that we were piloting the past couple of weeks, in every conversation I was in, we're looking at the data and we were trying to get under the variance and trying to get under the changes over time and what we think was happening. And we were having these robust conversations with, you know, indicator definitions and class manuals out and all of us sort of really digging in to say, what does this really mean? What do we think is under that? But then it inevitably led to conversations of what does this mean for our partnerships with schools and coaches who are also responsible for holding those partnerships with our individual campuses, saying, I'm really excited to use this to enable a conversation with a school leader, with the principal, about their disciplinary practices, about the policies in the school. So in particular around regard for child perspectives and movement and child comfort, some people saying, well, we think scores here are a little low because our schools have policies that prevent kids from being able to move around the classroom. And so of course our teachers are then doing that, and that's why the score is what it is. And so this now gives me an opportunity and some data and some definitions to take to that school leader and have a conversation with them about that policy. And so for me, this is amazing. Like, this is exactly what we would hope to be true, where we can utilize the shared language that is rigorous, that is research-backed, that we know is connected to the outcomes that we want to see for kids. And this is enabling our people to then move that systems change work forward beyond individual teacher classrooms into the policies of schools, the practices at schools, the conversations that we're having with school leaders. And so I think those are some of the results that we're also seeing initially that are as worthwhile as what the actual numerical data is telling us.
That is beautiful. And I mean, that just makes my heart warm, because I mean, that's what you want, right? That's the goal. But the power of class, yeah. Oh, I always love to hear these stories. Success stories always make me happy. So you said that there was this shift, right? And this improvement that happened from the first cycle, you know, a round of observations to the second one. What are you providing your educators to support that shift? What do those supports look like?
So our teachers have a coach, a dedicated coach, a leadership coach from Teach for America that is supporting them in developing their teacher leadership. And that's the way we talk about it internally at Teach for America, because at the end of the day, we are not strictly a teacher development organization. We are a leadership development organization. As Grant mentioned mm-hmm. earlier, we see the success of our mission towards educational equity not only resting on our first and second year teachers that we have the most direct contact with, but also in our alumni base. And so in the teaching part of it, in the time that people are core members with us, That leadership development effort focuses on their teaching. And so their coach is their teacher leadership development coach, who provides them with not only support connected to what they're observing in classrooms, right? They go in and they observe, but then they provide support around how that person is developing their leadership writ large, and helps them make connections to the broader ecosystem of support that that core member has access to. So helping them make a connection between the goals that they have for their kids, the goals that they have for themselves, and the actions they might take to get to those goals. And so there's a broad set of tools that that coach has available to them to provide to the core members to support their improvement. And so what has happened is we have integrated class into that set of tools and into that coaching approach, where it is one of the key components of our coaching approach at Teach for America, that the coaching that's happening should be data informed. So our coaches are obviously doing the observations themselves. And so they have the, you know, the full data that they have from doing that observation. But then they are also utilizing class scores to isolate areas of strength and areas of development and pull those into the coaching conversations directly with core members and align that with the other pieces of evidence that they're seeing, student academic achievement, other data that core members may be collecting from their classroom, the places that core members themselves are saying are areas of their strength or areas of their development. So our coach is really serving as that person that is synthesizing and triangulating and then making some prioritization decisions in that coaching conversation with core members. And what we've done is we've aligned the class observation windows to the three major sort of, the three major coaching conversations that happen throughout the year, beginning of the year, middle of the year, and end of year. Now, coaches obviously have touch points with core members in between those sort of pillar observations, but our class observation windows are tied to those conversations. So our coaches are bringing that data in to inform the coaching work that they're doing with their core members directly.
Yeah, and Marnetta, just thinking about those scores, like I said, not only are we trying to focus how our staff use class in a continuous improvement lens, we're trying to continually improve on how we're implementing it and how we're learning from that. And so from the research side, we're actually really engaged with a number of research partners around what's the best way to share class data and class scores with our teachers. Is it more impactful to share holistic feedback? Is it better to share like ranges, low, medium, high? Do they respond well to the quantitative data, or does it shut them down? And so we actually have a number of proposals out right now and are hoping to launch a few studies in the fall around feedback and coaching cycles. Because just like we know teachers are the largest driver of impact for kids, that's under the control of the school. The literature also tells us for teachers' professional learning that coach interaction is super important. And we know that's like the highest leverage point to help improve those interactions in their classrooms. So we're really invested in systematically like randomized control trial level investigations into what's the best way to provide scores? What's the best way to provide class feedback so that it has as much impact as possible for educators and for kids? And we're really excited to dive a little more systematically into that over the next year.
That's exciting. Really exciting. So that's one of the things that you have coming up next. What are some other next steps for TFA?
So as Grant suggested, we're continuing to iterate and refine our broad implementation strategy about how to do class at Teach for America. So that's ongoing work. But the really exciting, big, huge next step forward that we're taking is that we are scaling up to secondary next year. So next year, school year 24-25, every single core member at Teach for America, regardless of where they're teaching, will be observed using a class measure, a class observation tool. And so right now, as Grant said, we're around 800 core members in early childhood and lower elementary. We skew our placement secondary. So the biggest group of core members that we have has yet to be observed, and that's all going to change. We are really, really excited. And this is going to be a very big step forward, a very large scale up. Because this means that all of our coaches will be dual certified. So they will be renewing their elementary certification and adding in a secondary certification. And we just know logistically that, you know, there's going to be some growing pains around scheduling observations, making sure that those observations are scheduled during times that get us a robust indicator of what's happening in the classroom, et cetera. So we're very, very excited. And there's a lot of work that we have to do internally between now and starting really in July for our earliest start regions, how to scale that up to secondary. So just to clarify, right now we are doing our pre-K through fourth grade core members. And next year we will be doing literally everyone in the core, regardless of their placement, using the two different scoring tools. So we're really, really excited and a little daunted, if I'm being honest. I don't know about you, Grant.
Yeah, and I think something that's really exciting, I'll stay on the excited thread. I think that another thing that's really exciting is that we also, for a number of our 5th through 12th grade core members teaching 5th through 12th grade, do student perception surveys and get student voice feedback on the classrooms. And so this year, since we were just doing class in the primary grades, we didn't have an overlap of those two data sets. But starting the next year, we'll have both class scores and the Cultivate student survey data for the same classrooms. And so I think another thing we're really excited about moving forward is having those data overlap and being able to compare what students are saying with what observers are seeing and the interactions in the classroom and get into rich conversations about, like, where does that align? Where are students giving the feedback? How could your interaction shift in order to address that feedback? So that's super exciting. And then the other kind of like data nerd thing that I'm excited about. So we mentioned we've been user testing these, we call them sense making or meaning making protocols. And so we've done a number of pilot tests with them, but those are going to roll out systematically across the organization next year. So that after every class observation window and Cultivate survey administration, our coaches are getting together with their hubs, with their peers, and saying, here's what I'm seeing in the data. Here's what I'm seeing in my cohort. Here's what I'm seeing as a hub. How are we going to strategically adjust the supports we're providing over the coming weeks and months in order to address these? And then we'll be able to roll that up at the enterprise level and think, like, as an enterprise, how are we responding to those and making strategic shifts year over year in the resources we're allocating to different places? And to have that common language through class to even be able to do that is a massive win. And so I think this year has been laying the foundation to kind of like teach everyone that language and get our hands wet in using it and implementing it. And next year, I think it's going to be a huge burst of, now how do we learn as a system and learn at scale from these data that we're collecting? Because the last thing Robin, anyone at Teach for America want is for this to feel like a compliance task, that we're just going in to get the data to satisfy some sort of compliance task, and they don't actually generate improvement. And so I'm glad that a lot of those improvement and continuous improvement components are going to be going online at scale next year to really systematize the way we are improving as a system based on the really rigorous data that we're collecting.
Wonderful. For our audience who may not know, you know, what secondary covers, what age can you share with them, what age groups, age levels that is?
Yeah. So this will be all of our fourth grade through 12th grade place core members. So excellent. Any Teach for America core member, regardless of grade placement, regardless of content area, regardless of whether they are in a special education placement where they are co-teaching or pulling kids out, doesn't matter. They will have an observation based in class, and we will have a score on what's happening with the interactions in their classroom. And to Grant's point, this is going to be a major engine that's then driving organizational level, collaborative, continuous improvement, where we can really tailor around trends that we're seeing org-wide, trends we're seeing in various cohort groups, down the many layers that Teach for America operates in, because we will have that holistic data for literally everyone using the shared language, using a shared tool.
Perfect. So from pre-K all the way up through 12th grade.
That's right.
And the reason why that happens is because around fourth or fifth grade, depending on the system, classrooms move from a what we would call like a self-contained classroom, where there's one teacher teaching all the subjects, to they're starting to move between classrooms. And so the structure of the class changes, mm-hmm. the length of the segments starts to change. And so we wanted to, this goes back to the implementation, we wanted to start with a smaller group. Only about 25% of our core members teach in those primary grades, and the other 75% are in secondary. So that was a little easier of an entree point. And now that we have like comfort and familiarity with that tool, really expanding it to a much larger audience, but because of the structure of their classrooms have changed a little bit. And especially when you get into like the instructional support domains, those definitions change a little bit as the developmental age of the students change. Is why we kind of have that fourth or fifth grade break between the two tools.
Perfect. Thank you for that clarification, because I was gonna tease that out so I get, you know, for an understanding. So I appreciate you proactively doing that for me so I didn't have to ask. All right. We've talked a lot about, you know, your mission. One of the things you said was equity is important to us. So as great as this organization is, you know, I'm sure we have some listeners who are wondering about our partnership, knowing who we are as an organization, right? And who you are as an organization, and some of the concerns about your approach to taking teachers on to your program. So I want to talk about that some. So despite evidence that shows that these teachers are quite effective, educator prep placement programs such as Teach for America stir up some controversy, right? And they have over the years, as people have questioned if it really is truly equitable, right? Considering that the students in disadvantaged areas are given inexperienced teachers. So what I'd like to talk about is, how does Teach for America work to bridge those gaps?
Absolutely, Marinetta. And we have heard those concerns. And I think we've made a lot of adjustments in response to those as well. So I feel like a lot of people's archetype of Teach for America is that we're taking a lot of recent grads, mostly white mm-hmm. female grads from top tier institutions, and dispersing them across the country into low income communities. And that was for a long time the reality in a lot of places. And especially in the last 10 years, we made a strong shift, one, toward ensuring that the core members that we're selecting mirror and represent the population that we're serving. So more than half of our core members identify as BIPOC. More than two-thirds identify as either BIPOC or coming from a low-income community themselves. So we've made a really intentional shift on that front in our recruitment. We've also shifted from kind of a national recruitment model where you get sent anywhere in the country to a very local recruitment model where we're recruiting people from the communities where they teach to teach in that community, and have really worked in a lot of policy spaces to try to open up routes for people to become teachers, especially in our rural areas, who might not have the degree credential that the licensing system might say they need, but actually bring a ton of wealth and resources and knowledge about the community to be strong teachers, especially in many of our Indigenous and rural areas, where that can be a barrier to someone who would be a phenomenal teacher working with their students. So those are a number of like recruitment structural level shifts that we've made. And to your point, and we like monitor kind of our impact, there's been a ton of research on TFA's impact that shows that we are, that our teachers have the same or an outsized impact in their classrooms. And that is deeply important to us, that our teachers are always growing. And that is honestly why we came to class, why we came to having a structured measure, because we wanted to be sure that we were not waiting on lagged student achievement data in order to know our impact 2 years after the fact. We wanted to be able to make changes in the moment in response to data that we know has predictive validity for not only students' academic outcomes, but also their social emotional outcomes and development. And so in the way that we're designing our measurement ecosystem, in the way that we are recruiting our people and supporting them throughout the time, the way we are trying to place our teachers and cluster them more together and provide supports to help them integrate and support one another in the communities in which they're serving and leverage each other's expertise, working with alumni who are still teaching in those communities and know the community well and have those funds of knowledge for the communities in which they're in, are a number of shifts that we've been making to ensure that our teachers are having not only an outsized impact on their students' education, but are integrated members of the community who are helping drive the needs and goals of that community and what they want to be true for their kids moving forward.
And that's why this is such a great partnership, right? We are aligned in those goals. Robin, did you want to add anything to what Grant said?
Yeah, I think one of the other things I would add is that I think some of the realities of the inequitable education system that we have in this country make it difficult for any new teacher to be really successful with kids. And so I think that we see this larger issue with teacher retention, which I know is what we talked about last time, and teacher shortages. But I think sort of that's a larger piece of this. And as Grant mentioned, we have a very high percentage of our alumni that stay in education and that stay in the work, and an even larger percentage of alumni that stay in the broader systems change effort that we know is required. We know we are not going to get to equitable education systems just in classrooms. That's a critical piece of it, but it requires this broader systems change work. And so I think there's a really important part of Teach for America's mission that is that we want to do amazing things with kids in classrooms with our core members. And there's also work that spans beyond that. And I think one of the critical things about this partnership with you all is that utilizing class at Teach for America puts us in conversation with other school systems. It puts us in conversation with the broader field. It allows us to do these things that can maybe reposition not Teach for America as doing the work alone, but Teach for America as doing the work in coalition with others that have the same mission to create equitable education systems. And as someone that has worked in both traditional teacher prep and teacher prep here at Teach for America, what I see is that we have more similar problems across traditional and non-traditional teacher prep and support and development than we have differences. And so I'm really driven by this idea that we should really be working together to solve the same problems that we have around teacher professional learning, supporting quality classrooms, as opposed to seeing our problems as separate and apart.
All right. I mean, that was kind of also the draw for second edition for you, right? Second edition class. Yeah.
And I think as we were looking at tools, and I think we talked about this more last time, we did this like whole extensive process to determine what tool would work best in our system and bring in stakeholders. But a key draw right at that moment, you all were starting to launch second edition and its specific focus on equity and diversity, equity, and inclusion. And it felt so spiritually aligned. And to Robin's point, like, we didn't want to design another boutique measure. We wanted to be able to be in conversation with schools and systems, something that had really strong research backing. And so to see that that was a priority for Teachstone and that they were making intentional shifts there in order to respond to feedback and to be more responsive in classrooms, we're like, yes, this makes sense. Like, this is exactly where we want to be too. We want to be a part of this. So I think that that shift to second edition was also a huge draw for us in not only the quality of the tool, but also in signaling kind of the spiritual alignment of the partnership. And I think that's borne so much fruit over the last year in the way we're able to work together and communicate because of our alignment and what we're trying to achieve together.
All right. I have one more question before we go. And thank you for, you know, going down that road with me, because I think it was important for people to understand why this is such a beautiful partnership and how we're aligned in the same goals in our communities, you know, and in the profession in which we work. So my last question would be, what advice, I would like for each of you to give advice to other programs, like what advice would you give as they begin implementing class? Like, what would you tell them that would be a key thing that they would need to do? And we can start with you, Grant.
I would say ground your staff and your teachers and the communities that you're going to implement this in the vision of what is possible and the why. Like, we measures understandably and deservedly get a bad rap. We have used quantitative data in some really damaging ways. We, being the global society, in our society, education policy in this country over the last 10 or 20 years. So it can be a hard sell. And there's a lot of mistrust that is well earned around measures. And so to ground people in the vision of what this is going to enable to make a better future for our students is where I would start. And from that, all the other things will flow, because it's going to be hard. It's going to be bumpy. Things are going to come up that you didn't expect. And if you don't have that shared commitment to a vision of what is possible with those data, I think that is what has been really helpful for us and what we come back to when it gets really hard and challenging is, why are we doing this? And why are we doing this for our kids and communities? What was the need we were trying to solve for? And so that would be the advice that I would give, is really make sure you're able to give that 30, 60 second elevator pitch on the vision of what you want to be true for all kids as a result of your implementation.
Oh, see, for somebody who didn't know what they were going to say, that came out great. Robin, what would you say?
I mean, I would agree with Grant. So I'm going to say a second thing, and we'll see if this was Grant's second thing that he would say if he was given two pieces of advice. So I think once you have that vision and that clarity about your purpose and your why, to design the technical and adaptive changes and systems and structures around that why, because that's going to be what eventually drives you to that why. And I think we had, for a lot of reasons, we kind of had to do the technical first and then have the adaptive follow along. And I really wish we'd been in the position to have both of those things happen at the same time. And there are things that we are doing to make sure that we are leading towards that why. And Grant mentioned some of these, like we aren't putting a lot of numbers on our data reporting right now, because we don't want people to fall back into old habits around just give me a number, just give me a number. We are trying to create meaning-making experiences that are long. The ones that we're piloting are 8 hours spread across 2 days. And we want to do that because we want people to have the time to slow down and really think about what the data are saying and really do some root cause analysis as opposed to just seeing a number and jumping to action. And so I think my advice is to really think carefully about the technical and adaptive supports that need to be in place to get your system to actually following through and getting to that why that you have of implementing class to begin with, and putting in the safeguards and the sort of structures in place to help you get there. I guess maybe a good metaphor is, you know, Grant saying to lay out the boardwalk. And I am saying that in the places where you know that boardwalk is going to go over some water, maybe, you know, putting up a guardrail so that you know you're not going to fall in the water as you go across that boardwalk. And those two things sort of working in partnership to get you to where you want to go.
Thank you so much. Grant, Robin, again, thank you so much for sharing your big work that you're doing at Teach for America. I'm so interested, and I'm sure the listeners are going to be interested in hearing from all of you again as you start to get your long-term data from your...
We are always here for you, Marnetta. This has been a ton of fun. Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
Listeners, you can find today's episode on our website at teachstone.com/podcast. There you can find the audio and video versions, as well as the full transcript of our conversation. And of course, behind great leading and teaching are powerful interactions. Let's build that culture together.
Thank you to today's team. Marnetta Larimer is our host. Our producers are Isabella Henriksen and me, Megan Cornwell. Editing help is from Castos. You can find Impacting the Classroom on our website at teachstone.com/podcasts, where you can also listen to our other show, Teaching with Class. Impacting the Classroom is a Teachstone production.